Hello and welcome to the Central Asian Podcast Majlis. I am Mohammed Tahir, Director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, and host of the Majlis. After nearly 25 years of discussion, construction of at least the Turkmen section of the TAPI Turkmenistan-Afghanistan-Pakistan-India gas pipeline has finally kicked off over the weekend in the Turkmen city of Mari. The Turkmen president thinks that the pipeline will become operational by December 2019. He is so confident that he decided to share 85% of the entire cost from Turkmenistan's own resources. The total cost of the pipeline will be $10 billion. It is obviously a huge boost to the project, but as it has been the case for years, the security situation in the transit country of Afghanistan remains very difficult, so much so that Asian Development Bank has just announced to cut its support for Turkmenistan-Afghanistan-Tajikistan Railway. The question is, how far TAPI can get at this time? What does the timing of the announcement tell us? And is Turkmenistan really has the necessary resources to pay the amount it promises to pay? To discuss the subject from Washington, I have William Byrd, who is currently Afghanistan expert at the United States Institute of Peace and former Afghanistan country manager for the World Bank. From Canada, Dr. Robert Kutler is joining us, who is senior researcher at the Institute of European, Russian and Eurasian Studies at Carleton University in Ottawa, Canada. Also joining us, Bruce Panier, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. Bruce is currently in London. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you.
Dr. Kutler, first of all, let's talk about the announcement by the participating nations of the construction of the project over the weekend in Turkmenistan. What do you make of that?
The announcement is at first puzzling, and one has to ask what it really signifies. And the more one thinks about it, the more difficult it is to have confidence in the expeditious construction of the pipeline. Let us think, for example, of the east-west pipeline running across the south of Turkmenistan. The TAPI is more than twice as long, and will cost five times as much. The east-west of the pipeline cost about $2 billion. Now, recall that this was announced in 2008 or so. It took 7 years for this to be constructed. Right. By Turkmenistan, and not only by Turkmenistan, with some unannounced foreign assistance. And it was only within one country. So there has to be skepticism about the capacity of Turkmen gas by itself, as it was announced, construct a pipeline within 2 or 3 years that is over twice as long and goes through four countries, including one that is driven by civil war.
Yeah, the Afghanistan angle of that is even more interesting. Mr. Byrd, your expertise on that subject would add huge value to this discussion. You just had a Pentagon report yesterday drawing a chilling picture of further worsening security situation in Afghanistan. As I said earlier, the Asian Development Bank has just stepped back from another very similar project citing security concerns in Afghanistan. It seems that it's a worse time to even talk about a project like this. Am I reading the picture from wrong side?
Certainly, the security situation is really worrisome, and the pipeline route actually goes through some of the more insecure parts of Afghanistan, right, particularly in the south areas, which basically the Taliban has a large degree of control over, and then other areas also where individual warlords have some influence. So certainly, whether this would stop it or whether this would mean there'd have to be a lot of deals made and basically extortion by the Taliban and others on the route to allow the pipeline to go ahead, I don't know. That we will have to see. But it's no doubt it's a constraint. By the way, on the railways, I think railways are the wrong investments for Afghanistan, regardless of the security situation. So I'm not entirely sure whether the reduction of support for that railway was actually security considerations, or actually the economics of railways in Afghanistan don't make sense. If I could just add a little bit about the big picture, however, Central Asia has abundant energy and relatively low-cost energy, and whether that's coal, hydroelectric, or gas in this case. And South Asia is very energy short and has a very high cost of energy. So these projects make eminent sense for energy transfer from Central Asia to South Asia through Afghanistan. And I've actually been fascinated how somehow these bilateral political, deep-seated political issues, India-Pakistan, Afghanistan-Pakistan, Iran being right next door, et cetera, have actually, I'm sort of surprised that the project has gotten as far as it has, but I definitely agree that security will be an issue, and if it goes ahead at all, it will involve some increased clout for the elements that control the route, particularly the Taliban.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Bhatt. No doubt about the necessity of the project in terms of needs of certain countries for energy, and also from Central Asian perspective to find a new buyer. Obviously, there is a need for that, but the security is another subject. Is there any signal, Bruce, which would give any reason for being optimistic about the possibility at this time? Obviously, we are talking about this project, also security situation in the country and investment for long, long time. So what has changed now that the leaders came together and decided to go ahead with this?
Yeah, I think you put it rightly that this is possibly, although this project's been discussed for more than 20 years, this is possibly the worst time they could have actually decided to start building it. Any time previously they would have had a better chance, I think. It is a good sign that all the leaders got together with it. It shows that it got together in Ashgabat, for the ceremony to start this thing. It shows that they're serious about the project. As I said, I just don't see, the timing is just horrible for this. We've been covering some of the stuff, events in northern Afghanistan, just across the border from Turkmenistan. It's never been that bad as it is right now. Not for 20 years anyway. So it's a puzzler. I can see Turkmenistan's reason for wanting to at least get it started. Of course, they're becoming dependent upon only one customer, China, and so I suppose it signals that they are serious about an alternative project. And for domestic consumption, of course, it shows the people that after all these years that they actually do have this thing underway and started. But, it's going to end at the Afghan border, and it's just going to be an extravagant waste of money that sits there. The pipeline will sit there on the Afghan border and stop until things calm down in Afghanistan. And I've heard people make the argument that wars, not all war, every war has to end sometime. That's a pretty pathetic argument, to justify building starting the construction of a huge pipeline with, saying, well, someday the war will end. We don't know. It could be a couple of years. It could be 40 years. I see where the Turkmen people, they'll broadcast the thing being built and tell everyone that Turkmenistan's a great nation. And here we are kicking off this project we've been talking about for all these years. But in the end, they'll waste all this money building that pipeline, and it'll just sit there until God knows when.
Right. But I see, Bruce, Dr. Kuttler, both of you are, taking the same line. It's an argument against your argument, basically. Dr. Kuttler, a day or two ago, I was talking to someone on Twitter, and when I said I can't make sense of all this project, I was told that those who came together in Turkmenistan to launch the project are not crazy. They know what they are doing. Yes, logic is there. Do they really know what they are doing then?
Well, yes, I think they know what they're doing, but this does not mean that they have full confidence that the project will be built. It would be an insult not to attend the groundbreaking ceremony, and there is no cost, political or economic cost, to actually being there. We remember, it's easy to remember last year when Gazprom and Russia were still making a great public diplomacy over the South Stream pipeline, and that was a great groundbreaking launch, so-called, of the laying of the first pipeline in Russia on the eastern bank of the Caspian, of the Black Sea. And we all know what has happened to the South Stream pipeline. It is, that was about the only piece of pipe that was ever laid for it. So I think that Bruce has a very good view of things, that it's entirely possible that this will be built up to the Turkmen border, and it will sit there. Because let us remember that before this announcement, Turkmen Gas was in talks with the French firm Total. Yeah. They wanted Total to take the lead in the consortium. Now, the only conclusion that's possible in view of the announcement is that Total was not presented with a sufficient motive, a sufficient a reason that it should do so. So the Turkmen government was left with a choice, either to make no announcement concerning who's going to head the consortium, or to take it on themselves. And it would have been very embarrassing to have no announcement, so they took on themselves. And one further must ask, what does this 85% mean? Now, the new cost estimate is about $10 billion. As you know, in 2008, it was estimated at $7.6 billion. So 85% of that, okay, we're talking $8.5 billion. For a country like Turkmenistan, for which the annual gross domestic product is about $45 billion, what sense does this make? I can only conclude that this does not mean that Turkmenistan is going to put up $8.5 billion on its own, but that it has taken upon itself, what the announcement signifies is that it has taken upon itself the responsibility to seek the partners and the international companies and the sponsorship and the institutions that will provide $8.5 billion. And this is why it was announced at the same time that they've approached the Islamic Development Bank. It is why, perhaps, very possibly, one of the reasons why the Asian Development Bank withdrew its support for the railroad at this time, to signify that it did not wish to underwrite the TAPI pipeline. So if one analyzes the situation in this respect, one comes to the conclusion that very little has changed.
Right. But the only one change I see, Dr. Kutler, Mr. Bird, if you would like to answer that, on Monday, the Afghan president, Ashraf Ghani, said that his government will be setting up 7,000-strong new force. So there will be 10 soldiers for protection of each kilometer of this pipeline, all the way from Turkmen border to the Pakistani border. Is it going to make any difference, Mr. Bird?
Well, I think, just to add the Afghan ingredient to this, Dr. Ghani is a committed development expert by his background, and he's desperately looking for positive news and sort of big announcements in the current environment where the Afghan government is struggling politically and the security situation is quite bad. So this kind of announcement, I think, is seen at least from Ghani's side as something positive, that he can, show that things are happening. I would like to just also bring up the CASA 1000 project, because it's some way similar, but it involves transfer of electricity, not gas. And that project actually, as far as I know, the financing is almost completely accounted for. And that is moving forward with what sounds like a much better financial basis than this one, than TAPI, which has the Turkmen government is apparently stuck with most of the bill. But there is a need for these kind of new breakthrough projects. I guess I wouldn't rule out completely that the pipeline goes ahead, but if it does, basically the Taliban will be participants in it. And, you can't entirely, stranger things have happened, but, typically what happens with these large projects in a country like Afghanistan will be that some local power holder will guarantee the security, and as long as he's paid off enough, there will be security. I don't think the Afghan army is too overstretched to provide clean security in the sense of not being subject to local influences. So it does seem very challenging in the current security situation. If there is some hope on the peace negotiations, which doesn't look like much at the moment, but that could change, then the pipeline might be one of the benefits that actually helps lubricate negotiations. I realize it's a stretch now, and I fully agree with the others who've said it doesn't look very likely. But from the Afghanistan side, and particularly President Ghani, even just the announcement of the project is of some benefit.
Right. It's interesting, Mr. Burt, you raised that. A few days earlier, a Pakistani interior minister suggested that they would be willing to talk to Taliban for the security of the project, although Afghan side bluntly rejected that idea. How you see the involvement of Taliban is having any role in implementation of that project, or how you see Taliban playing any role in that?
Basically, if the project goes ahead, the Taliban will have to be involved. So that may stop the project at all, but otherwise they're controlling some of these areas. And now, you know, it could be part of a benefit sharing of the transit fees for, if there is an actual process, a peace process. More likely, it would just be that they're paying off different people, and maybe Pakistan is paying them off, or Afghanistan is paying them off. And let's also not forget, the pipeline goes through a pretty insecure part of Pakistan,
right,
too. Balochistan, where there's been a separatist movements for many decades. And so you can't even say for sure that the pipeline is completely secure in Pakistan, parts of the Pakistan route.
Someone wants to jump in. I just heard.
Just to say that the idea of the security of the pipeline has always been an issue. It's certainly true that what has just been said, that it would involve negotiating with Taliban as an autonomous political actor. Back some years ago, I believe the Americans had the idea, or some, not the government necessarily, but some people had the idea that one way to help create an Afghan allegiance and civil society would be to basically hire the people in the who live along the route and pay them to guard the pipeline, and that way to draw them into also the political process. Now sending the army is probably more practical, but as it's been said, it's an idea that would be very difficult to implement. I'm glad that the Balochistan aspect was brought in, because it's entirely correct and had not been mentioned yet. From the Indian side, there is, as has been said, India and as well as Pakistan are very energy poor, and they need all of the sources they can. One thing that should be emphasized, that I think Bruce mentioned before, is that Turkmenistan is also more likely than not becoming more desperate, looking for security of demand outside of China, because China is the only secure market they have. The volumes sold to Russia have never recovered from the end of the last decade. In fact, they dropped from about 10 to 4 billion cubic meters last year. The Trans-Caspian pipeline is still dormant in suspended animation. It is, as sanctions come off of Iran, Iran will not be willing to engage in swaps with Turkmenistan, because Iran will become a competitor for Turkmenistan on the world market, especially LNG exports. So there's no questioning the significance of this pipeline for Turkmenistan as an export route. But again, the practicality is in doubt.
Right. The Bruce. The
could I just come back? Sorry, just two quick points on this. With the electricity project, the Kasa 1000, which is from Kyrgyzstan and Tajikistan to Pakistan, there they have a good way of getting the local people on board and helping enhance the security, because some of the electricity will be provided to the local communities along the route. It's harder to do that with a gas pipeline. And the other thing about the Taliban, we should just go back and remember, TAPI started in the 1990s, and actual negotiations and, you know, whatever discussions occurred then were with the Taliban government of Afghanistan at that time.
Right. Bruce, what's wrong with the idea of involving Taliban? And I mean, what kind of situation it could lead to? And it's just a harmless project in benefit of everyone, isn't it? Why should Taliban, first of all, you know, to harm it or to be against it?
It's a good idea to include them. I agree. And of course, Mr. Bird's right. When the original project, the closest they got to actually starting it was in the late 1990s, and that was wheeling and dealing with the Taliban government. Taliban representatives were in Texas meeting with people to discuss this. So I don't see any problem. That said, at least as of last week, in Herat province, which is very close to where this pipeline is going to run, there was battles between the Taliban and the splinter group, the ones that defected, Mullah Rasul's boys. So, you know, which Taliban group are we talking about?
Yeah.
This is going to be a problem. So, yes, if you could get the Taliban on board, Mullah Mansour's guys, I suppose there would be a possibility. But as we know, there's been a split in the Taliban itself, and they're fighting again amongst themselves. And right, you know, as I said, in Herat province, so it's right close to where this pipeline is supposed to go. It would be fantastic to get them on board if they finally unify, or for the one side finally eliminates the other side, and you could get them to guarantee peace in that region. Then that would go a long ways toward Afghan peace. So it would have a benefit on top of that. But like I said, right at the moment, the Taliban are split, and so it's difficult until they mend their rift. I don't see how you can bring them on as a legitimate player. The other side, even if the mainstream group did agree to this, then it becomes in the interest of the splinter group to attack the pipeline and undermine the authority of the main group. So.
Mr. Birds, what's your point in that? I mean, which Taliban are we talking about?
I completely agree, thinking that this is going to be easier go ahead anytime soon. I think the way it might happen conceivably in the current situation, if it happens at all, would be by local deals. But yes, it's a problem, and I'm not a technical expert, but it is pretty easy to blow up a small place in a pipeline, and that stops the whole pipeline, if I understand correctly. So it is a very vulnerable on security side, and I completely agree with the points about the Taliban not being as unified at present.
Right. Let's take a short break here. When we will come back, we will discuss the financial aspect of the project, especially why one would put $10 billion to a project which is future hangs in the balance even before it's being implemented. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the Majlis. I am your host, Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Joining me from Washington, D.C. is William Bird, who is currently Afghanistan expert with the U.S. Institute of Peace and former Afghanistan country manager for the World Bank. From Canada, Dr. Robert Kutler is joining us, who is a senior research fellow at the Institute of European, Russian and Eurasian Studies at Carleton University in Ottawa. He also advises relevant policymakers on energy issues about Central Asia. Also joining us, Bruce Panier, who is the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. It's great to have you, gentlemen. We are discussing the possibility and feasibility of TAPI, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan and India gas pipeline, the construction of the Turkmen leg of which started on Sunday. If it is implemented, it will certainly help Turkmenistan to diversify its energy export, which is now totally depend on China. It will help Afghanistan to make, as the Afghan President Ghani say, $400 million of annual income by transit fees and thousands of jobs. It will also help Pakistan and India to ease their energy needs. So yes, from all aspects, it's a very timely and beneficiary project, but only if it is implemented. So need for such project was there for years, but it could not be implemented for various reasons, particularly due to lack of investment. Now, according to Afghan and Pakistani sources, we have new arrangement to finance the project. On Tuesday, Pakistani Minister of Petroleum Shahid Khakan Abbasi told in the press conference in Islamabad that Turkmenistan would be investing nearly $10 billion to the project. In other reports, Turkmenistan's share was suggested to be around 85% of the entire cost of the pipeline, which amounts nearly $8 or $8.5 billion. The rest of the amount will be shared by the other participating nations, each 5%. This is what the Afghan President Ashraf Ghani had to say about the cost sharing agreement the other day.
The investment of the project is not coming from outside. The government of Turkmenistan has decided to finance the project from its own means. Obviously, with times, some international financiers also expected to join, which we welcome. But it was the government of Turkmenistan who took the most important step.
Mr. Burt's 85% of the cost is coming from Turkmenistan, and the other participants will be sharing each 5%. It's an interesting arrangement. What are they thinking behind it?
Well, the short answer is I don't know, and I think my colleagues on this forum will know much better, but it does point to me a sign of desperation on the part of Turkmenistan, but I really don't know the government finances and the capabilities in Turkmenistan to take it on. It does suggest the interesting thing is, in my opinion, is not related to Afghanistan, but why, if this is so beneficial for India and Pakistan, why they're not contributing almost anything at all. And for both India and Pakistan, particularly India, actually has active projects in Afghanistan and other areas, road building, etc. So it is a little bit, it's interesting, I guess, that the source of financing is so undiversified, and just putting back my hat as a development economist, for any project that's this large, you would want to have more diversified funding just to mitigate the risk. But on exactly why Turkmenistan is taking this on, whether it actually can afford the $8 billion that it would be contributing and how it would finance that are questions for the others. Just again, to my first point was, and I think it's still correct, is this project is eminently sensible economically. If for a $10 billion investment, Afghanistan itself, just by itself, just for transit fees, is getting several hundred million dollars a year. It's clear that the economic and financial benefits of this project are enormous. But I would pass the Turkmenistan question to others with the query that why it's interesting, let's say, that India and Pakistan are not do not seem to be contributing.
Right. Dr. Kutler, you raised this question in the first half of the show. In fact, we are not talking only about around $8 billion. I was just reading an abstract from the Petroleum Minister of Pakistan's press conference after the inauguration. He thinks that Turkmenistan will be investing nearly $25 billion to this project. According to him, this involves construction of the pipeline, also developing the gas fields from where the pipeline should be pumping the gas. Can Turkmenistan really afford this project financially? And so we are talking much, much more than what the $8 billion.
Yes, as we know, the costs of these projects tend to grow over time and not to diminish. And one can think of many examples of this. One of the factors that is in favor of the pipeline that I just want to mention, and then I'll get back to your question so that perhaps Mr. Berg would address this subsequently, was that it was suggested that at least inside Pakistan, China, which, by the way, I believe contributed technology and workers to the construction of the East-West pipeline within Turkmenistan. There's no public evidence of this, but I believe it to be the case, and that Turkmen Gas cannot do it on its own. And China would perhaps look favorably upon assisting the construction within Pakistan as part of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. I just want to throw that out there. But to return to your question concerning the financing, yes, the $8.5 billion is certainly a low estimate that will not get lower. And as Mr. Berg and as we know, that there's a tendency for such projects for risk mitigation, amongst other reasons, to spread the financing around. In fact, Mr. Berg is also correct that it's remarkable, and I think Mr. Pannier remarked on this too, that it's remarkable that the project has gotten this far. If one looks at the list of intergovernmental agreements and other agreements that have been reached since 2008-2009, it's an impressive list of institutional and legal infrastructure. But there's a reason why the agreement on the financing has waited until the end. Not only is it the most important, but it's the most difficult. And we would take the example of the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline, which was the first energy pipeline of its sort after the fall of the Soviet Union, that this was syndicated all around. And very importantly, you need to have an international bank, development bank, coming on board to give the seal of approval that this is a good, not only this is a good idea, but it looks like it's going to work. And this was, in the case of the BTC project, the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, and then the World Bank and a few others came on. So you really need this seal of approval from the international financial community for the project to be taken seriously. And that doesn't seem to be immediately happening, at least in the case of the TAPI pipeline.
Right. You know, if you knew that this is going to happen for sure, I mean, if this project is going to happen for sure, then you might borrow money from here and there to invest in that. But we know that because of the situation in Afghanistan, that seems really questionable. Just a few days ago, there was an attack to Kandahar Airport, which one would imagine should be one of the most secure place in a province. And that's the province it will be passing through. So what is the motivation of Turkmenistan by taking such a huge risk here, Bruce, other than just to take it to the border and wait for the customer? Is there any other motivation than that?
Like I said, there is the domestic consideration of they have to show the public out there that something is, you know, they're engaged in some big project. You know, they have the pipelines that go to China and everything like that, but that's already old news. Just to convince the people that, you know, once again, that Turkmenistan is a great nation and a center of attention and stuff, they have to. And they've been talking about TAPI for so long that I think a lot of this is just for publicity, you know, for their own public's consumption.
Too costly publicity, Bruce.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, but this is a government that builds these huge monuments to the president, you know, at great expense, and they're all over the place. So there's a lot of questions about the way they spend money in Turkmenistan, not just on pipelines. Now, as regards pipelines, though, I would point out that since independence, there have been pipelines built, you know, the one to Iran and then the one to China, but the Turkmen government hasn't put up money for any of those. You know, the Iranians funded the construction of the pipeline that went into Iran and was paid back by, you know, the Turkmen paid it off by sending gas, and China has done the same thing. So it's also a question of the fact that the Turkmen have actually never undertaken a major pipeline project that was solely under their control. So I have questions about that right there. Do they have the ability to actually build, you know, and manage the construction of a big pipeline, even in an ideal situation? I would also ask, and hopefully Dr. Cutler will speak about this a little bit too, but my understanding about one of the reasons that they haven't gotten a major investor, certainly a major Western investor, is those people are looking for upstream rights. They want to participate not just in the construction of the pipeline, they want to participate in the development of the gas fields that are going to provide the gas for the pipeline. And the Turkmen government has been extremely resistant to letting foreign companies have onshore contracts within their space, the China National Petroleum Corporation being the sole exception in this case. So, you know, so I think that's one of the problems with financing that they're going to have. And I'll be interested to see who blinks first. Will the Turkmen government finally decide that they don't have the money or really the experience to build this pipeline and finally grant somebody an onshore contract to develop the Galkanish or some part of the Galkanish field? Or are they going to play this waiting game, you know, and just hope that someday the situation calms down enough that they can actually get a foreign investor to come and say, okay, you've got the pipeline, it started in Afghanistan, it looks like the situation's stabilizing, so I'll fund it. I would expect the former would be the more likely, where they will finally have to concede that in order to get the pipeline, to get a Western company or a big company interested in this, they're going to have to grant an onshore contract.
Dr. Kotler, is there anything you want to add in this?
No, well, this is a good point that the policy of the Turkmen government, as we all know, was being with the Chinese exception to sell the gas at the border. And although I recall just in the last few days a headline that Dragon Oil, which has experience with the Turkmenistan government, was sort of looking at the TAPI financing, it's certainly the case that there has been insufficient incentive provided to Western companies to participate in the development of the onshore field. And it is definitely a problem. Until now, of course, the Asian Development Bank has acted as the institutional secretariat for the TAPI project. And if you actually begin construction, you're going to need something more than this kind of a small organization. You're going to need an organizational design. You're going to need specialists. You're going to need experts. It's not even clear, honestly, that the Turkmenistan government disposes of or has access to within the Turkmenistan politics and society all of the expertise that they would require for the construction of the pipeline at all. And it's also it's equally unclear, equally doubtful, one might even say, that they have the negotiating skills that would be required in order to craft a credible legal and institutional and organizational infrastructural framework. You look at other consortia for even the just the Caspian Sea region pipelines, and these are very complex organizations that also evolve over time. And the Turkmenistan government only has so many human and organizational resources at its disposal. And it's entirely possible that it's used them all up in the China pipeline. And if they've learned anything, and if the TAPI gets built, it's not going to get built the same way the Chinese pipeline is going. The CNN pipeline is going to be built, which is built with Chinese capital and Chinese workers with some Turkmenistan input. So there are all sorts of reasons to, unfortunately, I'm unhappy to be skeptical about the plan, but one has to be realistic. There are all sorts of reasons to doubt the capacity of the Turkmenistan government to implement the pipeline in the current situation where it's getting very little help from anyone.
Right. You know, there are also lots of questions about that. The fact that we are talking about this 85% share of Turkmenistan, this is coming from outside sources and not from inside of Turkmenistan. Unfortunately, we need to wrap up our discussion. But the final point I wanted to raise is whatever the outcome might end up to be, the fact is that the construction kicked off. So what are the optimistic and pessimistic scenarios about the next phase of this project, Mr. Burt?
Well, I guess the optimistic scenario is that the peace process in Afghanistan, which had a little bit of a start early in this year and then got derailed partly because of the Taliban succession crisis, finally does move ahead. It's hard to see that happening before one more year of fighting, right? Because the new actors in the Taliban have to demonstrate their whatever you want to call it, credibility by fighting. So one doesn't see in the spring and summer a likelihood of ending fighting, but maybe after that, if things hold, there might be some possibility. I mean, the pessimistic scenario is that, as has already been said, it just doesn't get built. Mm. And I did want to come briefly back to the point about Pakistan because, yeah, I would imagine the costs of the pipeline in Pakistan would be borne by Pakistan, and Chinese assistance for that is certainly could not be ruled out. But then there's another issue there that once the pipeline reaches Pakistan, the Pakistan government particularly may not have much incentive to build it to go on to India because they might be happy to keep the gas themselves. And then that raises a lot of issues about, and I don't even know in the TAPI if there are already agreements on the pricing and, you know, how the flow from the pipeline would be shared between India and Pakistan or some very, very nitty-gritty issues there.
Right.
So even in a semi-optimistic scenario, that might, the India-Pakistan issues might still be challenging to deal with.
Right. Dr. Kutler, about the optimistic and pessimistic scenarios about the next phase of this project, briefly, please.
Well, there is no significant obstacle, as you said in the beginning, to the construction, physical construction of the pipeline up to the border. And as has been said, this may be undertaken for domestic, political, and economic reasons. Well, you know, the optimistic scenario is that we all live happily ever after, and it gets built through circumstances that are very difficult to anticipate at the present. That does sound a little bit like a fairy tale. But miracles have occurred before. In 1998, no one thought that the Baku-Jehan pipeline would be built. But then what happened was that BP took the lead, a credible multinational international energy company, and they were able to secure the financing and the political momentum. Turkmen Gas just does not have that reputation to be able to do that. So falling back then on the pessimistic scenario is that for the foreseeable future, no segment is built outside Turkmenistan.
Bruce, Dr. Kutler is talking about kind of miracles here. What is your view on that, about the next phase of the project?
You know, sadly, I'm going to have to agree with that. It takes, you have to have some stability and peace in Afghanistan, at least along the, in the area where the pipeline is supposed to go through. I don't see much chance of that happening any time in the near future. So I'm going to say that there's not, you know, it's probably just going to end at the Turkmen-Afghan border for now. Hopefully, you know, again, this is one of those things of like, you know, wars can't last forever. You know, at least they'll have that section done. And if hostilities do subside enough in coming years, they have that segment already built. So it's that much faster to complete the whole project. Pessimistically, the same thing just keeps going on. We have troubles in Balochistan. We have troubles in Afghanistan. You know, right now, India and Pakistan seem to agree on this, but that was a good point that Mr. Bird made that, you know, we don't know. I mean, tomorrow, the relations could get a lot worse, and one of those two countries decide that they're not interested in the project anymore if it's going to help the other one. So that would be the most pessimistic view, certainly. Still continued conflict in Afghanistan, continued conflict in Balochistan, and problems in Pakistani-Indian relations, which would leave Turkmenistan with a 180-kilometer stretch of useless pipeline down south.
Thank you, Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlag Awazi. Also, big thanks goes to William Byrd, who is the currently Afghanistan expert with the United States Institute of Peace and former Afghanistan country manager for the World Bank, and Dr. Robert Kutler, who is senior researcher fellow at the Institute of European, Russian, Euro-Asian Studies at Carleton University in Canada. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining the Majlis.
Thank you.
Thank you. So this is
for a wonderful conversation.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, director of the Turkmen Service at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty. Thank you. Bye-bye.